You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette and Jim. Lisette isn't with me. Well, she's here, but she's not on camera with me. If you can see, we're all disheveled. We're just relaxing and having a wonderful time where we are right now. In any case, I wanted to get into today's show immediately. It is I'll call it landmark show. It's an opportunity to bring in a lot of psychological concepts into one show, and this may trigger a lot more shows as this year goes on. So here it is. It's going to be called Hacked Minds, Rewired Brains, and the Future of Love in this AI society. Let's look at it. Let's see where we are. So we have grown in evolution, meaning that the human has evolved, if you follow evolution. Or at least we've been around on the planet for many, many years. And we've developed certain senses. And we talk a lot about the triune brain and how we have this reptilian, innate survival instinct and the survival portions of our brain that most of our standard facial expressions come from, our emotions come from. They all help us survive, get along with others, and basically live in society together without having to speak much. But it gives us that context where when we speak, we are able to communicate better. So we have that. We also have the more emotional part of the brain, which is where we find love and attachment and we get angry. And that's the part that when, say, our instinctual part gets angry, it then dumps chemicals into our brain where our body reacts chemically to stuff, as well as we get rewards in that area. So when we meet somebody who's pleasurable, we like them, we can start to feel emotion. Or if something happens and it's a good thing, we can feel happy about it. And so those things are part of the human concept. And then lastly, we talk about the human brain. The brain that's more complex, the brain that develops later in life. It is actually the last part to really structurally become sound. So in the area of 25, 26 years, that's where our human brain, the logical brain, the prefrontal cortex, the neocortex, whatever you want to call it, that's where it becomes more structured, where we can police ourselves more emotionally. Which kind of gives rise to why in youth we do things a little bit more, we can say emotionally, sometimes some people say stupidly. I know we can do stupid things as older adults as well, but let's just start there. So we evolve for physical, slow face-to-face learning of each other, meaning over time as we meet people, we see the consistency in their behavior, in their aspects. And with that, we learn, do we get along with them? Do we not get along with them? Do we trust them? Can we learn from them? Some of that starts to be lost as we get more and more in this AI and social media society. We like to have touch and movement and smell and you know, what is the tone of someone's voice when we're hearing them? And a lot of that gets lost. The micro expressions that we give off when we communicate, that gets lost in these lack of face-to-face environments. Also, even when you're doing social media, or you're doing a web meet, and somebody's using a filter on their face, it's covering up their wrinkles, it's covering up their expressions, it's covering up that ability to get those little nuances in the conversation, so we start losing that. We talked about this a number of shows ago, how likes, you know, you get a like on a post you do, a like on a show you do, and it replaces the sense of belonging, the belonging that you would have in normal society when you go out and meet with people. So the electronic version of our society is completely different than the face-to-face physical version. So it's like the virtual versus the reality. Let's continue on with this, which is our brains didn't evolve for this environment. This environment's only been with us the last couple of years, that this really virtual environment, this AI filled, this social media filled, this way of communicating, talking, and being with others didn't happen until more recently. You know, the concept is psychology is catching up. No, it's not. Psychology is so far behind. I mean, even the concepts in psychology. And for those who don't know, I did do a lot of doctoral study in psychology. I did just receive my master's in psychology, master's of science in psychology, which doesn't really mean anything. I don't care about that, other than the fact that, yeah, there was concepts, core concepts, key concepts that are discussed. But really my interest in it and Lizette's interest in it has always been from a relational, from an understanding of how we get along with others, whether that's in business or whether that's in face-to-face human relations or love relations. So our grandparents worried about storms. They worried about food. And today people feel the same chemistry of wanting to survive based upon a post they did, based upon did they get a like. The trigger of the emotional, the survival instincts, the triggers have changed, but the biology, our human existence, didn't. So today's show, we're going to be talking about six things. We're going to be talking about artificial intelligence being used as a therapist. Now you can get an AI bot that will talk to you and discuss your situations. And we want to look at that and see, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? How does that help? Then we want to talk about the youth mental health crisis that I was surprised at this, but the CDC published in 2023 that 9.5% of high school students attempted suicide, which blew my mind. I actually went to the CDC website and said, these are self-reports. These are people who reported it. Is it that high? Whether it's that high or not, that's just an outrageous amount. And we don't talk about that in the media every single day. It's horrific. Next, neuroplasticity. We talk about that as well. Neuroplasticity, the ability for a mind to grow and to change and to rebuild and structure better or to structure worse. And we believe, or I believe, that social media, the ability to communicate anonymously, the fighting that goes on, the we call them bots, right, that put things on posts, you know, good or bad, just to drum up people responding, creates anxiety, creates problems, and that changes how we think and feel. And the more we focus on something, the more our brain builds in that area, and that's a terrible thing. We have eco-anxiety, the environment, ecology. Today, youth, and it's an astounding number when we talk about this later, the number of youth profoundly affected by the fear of what's happening with the environment is another form of something that should outrage us. Number one, either that we're doing nothing about the environment and it's affecting the youth this much, or two, that we're putting this much fear into our children where they're worried about their very survival in a way that they wouldn't be if they were cut off from media, they were cut off from electronics, if they didn't have access to all this real and fake and embellished news. We understand that there are things that are happening around the world that should worry us. The problem is, should a five-year-old have to worry about it to the same extent that the adults should be worrying about it? We'll talk about that later. What else do we have? Burnout and quiet quitting. You may have heard that this is a big psychological thing that's been going on for the last number of years. A lot of it was COVID-based, where people found that when they didn't have to go to work, when they stayed home, their well-being was increased. Their feeling of, you know, for some people, I'm saying this for some, that they were able to survive without having to go to work And then they re-looked at their life of going, do I really want the stress of work? Am I getting the reward? Is it worth the effort I'm putting in? We have to look at that. And then last, narcissism and social media psychology. And what I mean by that is that people get labeled different things. Oh, you're a narcissist, you're a psychopath, you're a sociopath. And it's a label that people toss around a little too freely. There may be core pieces of that definition that somebody fits, but then people just, you know, oh, you're this or that. They use that as a label and then stop to look at the behavior. So we're going to talk about labeling the behavior, not labeling the label, if that makes sense. We're going to talk about what is the behavior you want changed that you're recognizing someone else having. Is it something that you can actually have impact in changing? And not to just call somebody, oh, they're a narcissist, and then you basically write them off. We also want to talk about, is narcissistic behavior something that social media promotes? So when we come back, we're going to talk more about that on 90 Day Soulmate.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate. Today we're talking about psychological concepts that are in a society that a lot of people are talking about. They're actually the top psychological concepts of 2026, so we're getting right into them. One of the things that I want to continue on with is discussing some of what we believe is our core lenses that we look at biology and life through, but just from a trying to create a way to filter how we process this information that we're learning, meaning that is there a system that we can look at to more systematically look at behavior. So from an engineering standpoint, less so than a psychological standpoint, but from engineering, you know, being process-oriented, why do we react the way we react in certain situations? So we like looking at things like the triune brain model, which were the three concepts we brought up before, but we'll talk about again, the reptilian brain. And by the way, this doesn't mean this actually is true. It's just a way to understand the different ways we think, the different things that allow us to develop the patterns that we have based upon our personalities, based upon our physiology. And so let's look at the triune brain as being three distinct ways we think. Number one, the reptilian brain. This is the instinctual, reactive brain that we have little control over because it's what drives our survival. It's the deep, dark part of us. It's for dominance, reflex, and survival. And then we look at the next piece, which is a little bit more developed, which is the mammalian brain. Some people use it mammalian, but it's where the amygdala and the limbic system, the emotions are. And because of that, we now are more interacting with the environment. It's not as deep-seated, but there has to be some kind of emotional reaction to something. And so this is the emotional side of how we react. And then final is the rational human brain, which is sometimes called the neocortex, or the prefrontal cortex is actually where the logical part of our thought is best developed from. That these things, all these three concepts, which is almost like the id, the ego, and the superego in Freudian psychology, these are the ways we approach the concepts that we're going to be talking about. Modern distress is reptilian and limbic brain that reacts to this stress is reacting to modern symbology of those life-threatening things. So when we get attacked on social media because somebody disagrees with what we're thinking, we react like it's a survival mode thing. So these things affect us in the way our biology is tuned, even though they're just, you know, it could be, and I'm going back to, could be a bot, or it could just be a friend joking, but we don't get the full context. Was that sarcasm? Were they trying to be funny? Are they really a buddy of ours, just, you know, trying to push our buttons? Or are they seriously saying they hate us, or you're ugly, or, you know, I don't like that shirt, or I don't like the fact that you didn't shave your neck today, Jim? You know, whatever that is, those things can affect us deeply, just like it was really real, although it's only a sliver of reality. So segment one we're talking about is artificial intelligence, and let's go into digital mental health, where an AI can interact with us. This is where a system can analyze our emotional feelings, it can look at how we are, it can create, it can think of what the pattern is, and it does that without having any relationship with us. So it can analyze our emotions. It can put them in a neat little bucket and say, based upon that, you may want to think about this, and this is the way you may want to change what you're thinking. Are we using these AI therapists to help reduce our own stress, or is it to avoid relationships? So some of the studies that we read had talked about how AI therapy can help people reduce the stressful responses to stimuli. Like if they're having a problem with their spouse, they're having a problem at work, it can help them in relationship to the feelings by using CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy processes to help people think differently about the stress, and they can feel better. But long term, it doesn't address the interrelational feedback that they're getting from the people at work or from their spouse or from their partner or from their friends. They're not doing any relationship work. They're doing basically work on their own without an entity that has any vested interest and any emotional connection to them. Are they trying to feel better but stay separated from other people? So this is some of the negative of the AI bot. Feel better, but not really solve any of the problems. It's basically, I was just joking to Lizette before the show about, I have a nail in my foot, and I talk to the AI, and he has me or she has me. Now I'm assigning a gender role to an AI, which I probably shouldn't do, right? So I have the nail in my foot, and the AI says, hey, touch your hand like this, and I start doing that, and I'm going, oh, my foot feels better, but I haven't removed the nail, right? I'm focusing here. I've learned how to adjust to the pain without actually addressing the pain. So I can create ways of dealing with the pain by having a new behavior when that pain arises to relax me, to delay the response, to change how I respond, but it doesn't actually change that relationship. That nail in my foot, my partner, my boss at work is that nail in the foot, and I haven't changed any way that I react with them, or should I say that I react with them. Yeah, that would be right. How I interact with them, that's what I was looking for. I don't change how I interact. I just change how I react. So I decided that I was going to talk to Lizette about this interesting thing, that if something can trigger our emotions, change our emotions, understand our emotions, but is not, or that thing is not impacted by emotions at all, to me that sounded kind of like a psychopath or a sociopath, that it could trigger, move, and change our emotions without having any feeling, without having any skin in the game. And if that's true, if these AI bots can, quote, or the AI therapists can impact our emotions without having any skin in the game, isn't that kind of like, you know, a sociopath? Isn't that kind of like a psychopath? So I had this conversation with one of my AI thought leaders, and the response came back with that AI acts based upon its programming and what it knows, that it doesn't have an evil or a good intent. It has no feelings. It has no feelings into how we feel, but is driven by a set of programs or what it knows. So again, can analyze our feelings, it can understand patterns, it can help us change our patterns, but isn't impacted one way or the other. In fact, doesn't care at all about what happens to us. In fact, if I'm really, really sad, something happened, and at 2 a.m. I can't sleep, but I call my AI therapist or get on the little phone and I start texting, and at the end of the day, at the end of the text, I start to feel better and go to sleep. The AI bot doesn't care if I show up in the morning and text it back or don't text it back. It has no feeling. It may have helped me, but it doesn't care that it helped me. And is this good or bad? Well, it turns out that in the short term, it's good. In the long run, it really doesn't help at all. That it does more, and it's better than just reading about ways of helping yourself. So AI therapy does more for you, is more positive than just reading about it, getting information. This is what studies show. But it's far less beneficial, far less effective than having human interaction with a therapist. So it can reduce symptoms, but it does not participate in the relationship. So again, some of the research we talked about is that there is help involved, there's help by it, that there's short-term symptom relief is possible with AI therapy, but it tells us nothing about attachment, intimacy, or long-term relationship healing. It does nothing about that. It tells us nothing about that, and it does nothing about that, because it's not there for the relationship. It's just there for the outcome.
Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Segment 2, we're talking about youth mental health crisis. There is 9.5%. The CDC study that we mentioned earlier, 2023 CDC study, 9.5% of high school students reported that they tried to commit suicide in the last year. And either the students are vastly overstating the reality, which in one case, we're trying to fool the CDC, but let's take that at its word. There aren't 9.5% of high school students who actually are successful at their attempts, but that's a huge number. It's an outrageous number. And for us to think that there's nothing going on in society today that's impacting that, such as no one's at home, that they're spending 3, 4 hours, 6 hours in social media, which we know drives anxiety and depression. This is something that should be talked about on every talk show. What to do also, I don't know. Brain development at this age is just, it's all over the place. You remember when you were 12, 13, 14, 15, and social interactions were like the biggest part of your life. Do they like me? Do they not like me? Do I get along with this group? Are they making fun of me? Am I making fun of someone because they hurt me in the past? Whatever the case may be, the emotions are so much driving behavior that it's really hard to control this, especially when there's no breaks on social media. It's just like, okay, you have access to your phone and your social media. Parents don't know what their children are doing. And the kids who are doing it don't know really what that effect is going to be on them forever. Because at that point in their life, their amygdala, their central part of their brain, the brain part that's more emotional, is developing so quickly and so rapidly, And the prefrontal cortex is lagging behind. Basically, how this is an example of is that they're full speed ahead, foot is on the gas pedal, but the brakes aren't being applied because the prefrontal cortex is not working yet. In the population, there is 39, this is back to the CDC study. In the population, there was this 39.7% of those who responded to the CDC survey, 39.7% said they suffered from persistent sadness or hopelessness. 40%, 39.7%, 40%, that means 4 out of 10 students were sad or hopeless. Incredible amount. And this will become another show, which is how have these statistics changed over time? I don't remember being sad and hopeless as a youth. I remember having tough times at some times, but this sounds like a persistent issue, and it sounds like something that has changed. We'll look more about that. And then lastly, digital use explains part of this, but it doesn't explain a majority of this. So what else is going on? Small percentage have big issues, and maybe for each person it's not that great because, and I'm not trying to say these problems aren't so great, but the way to look at this is society on the whole. If this is a growing number, say it's only increased by like 10% since the year 2000, that a small increase over a large population can be a disaster for the population, the direction we're going in, especially with this hopelessness, which leads us to another subject in here, which we'll get to in a second, that we have all of our senses, our eyes, our nose, our ears, our taste, our touch, our muscle, knowing where our muscles are, our body is in reference to the ground. We have all these things going on, but social media, electronics really focuses on visual and a little bit of, finger touch, but we're missing all that. And so one of the things I would propose is that part of this issue is a sensory imbalance, that we have so much input from very few senses that we're missing the other. And when we miss the other and we're focused on a few, we're having deprivation in these areas of something that's necessary for a biological entity. The other thing is when we talked about feeling better about stuff, one of the things in the past that we've talked about is action. When you do action, when you're out and about, when you're in society, when you're talking with people, when you're playing a sport, when you're listening to a concert, you're bringing all of you're bringing your senses into use. And when you do, your input is coming in through your prefrontal cortex. Yes, it's affecting all of you, but when you have focus on the present, on the here and now, it's stops the worry. You're not worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. And you're really allowing yourself to be part of society. And so I think one of the things that we are suggesting is to get out there and be part of society. Whether you're a child or you're older, you want to feel better? Join other people. Join other people, communicate with other people, take part in hobbies and things that you like, and that will help. Because let's get back to neuroplasticity, which is number 3. This is the big psychological topic of 2026. Our brains will grow one way or the other in the direction that we focus upon. Our brains continue to build the synapses, the connections, the processing power in the things that we have interest on, and the things we spend time researching. If we just think about all the negativity and depressing things that are going on in the world, and we're constantly arguing on Facebook or with our friends or on social media, we will build the power to do that better. We will become better angry people. We will become better at disagreeing with others. We will make more sarcastic, ruder remarks because we'll become better at it because our neuroplastic brain, which I'm not sure that's a word, but the ability for our brain to grow and strengthen in what we focus on is so good, we will build those abilities. Our super ability is to do better in whatever it is we focus on. So that is something that we want to make sure that we want more love in our life, we need to focus on love. We can't focus on not hating things. And you've probably heard this before. We want to focus on what we want, not what we don't want. It's like driving the motorcycle. You don't want to focus on what you want to avoid. You want to focus on the way you want to go in order to find the open area. So as a motorcycle rider, driver, I relate to that. So here's a couple of things. Brain scans before and after an 8-week mindfulness training showed an increase in gray matter, in memory, and in emotional regulation in those who went through this mindfulness training. That in as little as 8 weeks, people were able to strengthen their ability to regulate their emotions. And this was a sign of, hey, you've got neuroplasticity, your brain is reshaping, it is growing, and you are doing better in the areas you want to because you are now, hey, how am I feeling about this? How do I want to react? It's changing how you go. This is almost a part of like cognitive behavioral therapy as well. Love isn't poetry, it's emotional system regulation. So when you want to do love, you need to learn how to regulate your emotion to show love. And if you're being dragged down into the sewer, into the gutter of social media arguments, you're going to be moving away from love. You can't hate hate and move to love. You have to love love and focus on love. 90 Day Soulmate. We'll be back after this.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Number four, the fourth segment is eco-anxiety. Anxiety, being anxious of the environment, being anxious about climate. Why does climate fear feel personal? Why doesn't reassurance work? Why, oh, it's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. The ocean's not rising that quickly. Well, it is a big fear. It is a global problem, meaning that there's global evidence of this being a problem. And I'm talking the fear aspect being a problem as much as the climate issue being a problem. It's the fear of it which is impacting us dramatically. That 59% of youth who were surveyed, there were 10,000 youth surveyed in 10 different countries, and 59%, a whopping majority, said they were extremely worried about climate change. That very or extremely worried about climate change, that this anxiety basically overwhelmed them. And 45% also said that this impaired their daily functioning. So every day this impacted what they were able to get done. Why should I do this if the world's not going to be around in 2 years? Oh, if the world will end in 3 years, why should I even bother? It's not going to be around for when I'm an adult, so why do I care? I've heard this. I've heard this from from our kids. I've heard this from other children. I've heard this from adults. This fear with data behind it. Some data supports the ability for people to have this conclusion, right? This then gives chronic amygdala activity, that our amygdala is activated all the time, pumping out fear chemicals, right? So we've got elevated cortisol, you know, that the stress chemical cortisol, elevated in our bloodstream, in our body. It's creating stress. It impacts our sleep, our mood. It impacts our motivation. Our motivation is lowered. Meaning and action restore regulation. So going back to action, getting involved in something, being involved in something meaningful, does help us regulate all these issues. So as far as the impairing of our daily activity, as far as being overwhelmed by this, being active in something meaningful, and maybe that is being active in cleaning the environment, maybe that's being active in being part of a protest, or going to school and learning how to do new technology, learning about new technology, where you can be part of the solution rather than just part of the complainers. Well, maybe I'll do that. Anxiety is energy, and it needs direction. So you've seen people who they're really upset about something, so they come up and find a solution. I've seen this on Shark Tank all the time, right? Where somebody there's a problem and you want to solve it. So I've come up with this solution. Well, here's the way to do it, is if you want to help your own problem, if your kids are anxious about it, let's work on this together. Let's work on solutions that help fix the problem, that help address the problem. And that may help us with our anxiety. And when we come back, we're going to get into burnout. Burnout of adults in companies and corporations.
Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Segment 5, burnout and quiet quitting. People just not wanting to be part of the office environment anymore. Is burnout laziness? I just don't want to work anymore. Or is it biology? Is there something that's triggering us to say, I just can't take this anymore? Why doesn't pressure motivate anymore? Or is it a different pressure? Or are we tired of it? What happens where we just say, you know what, I just don't want this pressure? The World Health Organization said burnout is equivalent to chronic workplace stress, and when that is not successfully managed. Burnout is an occupational phenomenon. It's not a personal failure. So we're talking about burnout is mismanaged stress and mismanaged things at work, and it's not you. It's typically the system. It's typically people you work with. It could be your boss. It could be what you're up against, that most burnout is caused by outside of yourself. I mean, you could be having problems at home and that could be carried over into work. But as far as the number one cause of it, it's internal systematic issues at wherever you are that may be causing burnout. It may also be the idea that We see all these other options to what we're doing, which in the past maybe you didn't, and now you're going, well, I really don't like it here anymore. I see these other options. But, you know, and is social media causing part of this as well? You know, I'm just going to be famous on social media. I'm going to make money being an influencer, and I don't need this work. I'm just going to tell my boss, well, I'm going to do it on my phone. Hey, boss, hey, I've got this phone in front of me. Let me tell you something. I don't need this job anymore. I'm going to become an influencer. Why don't you hit me so I can get many views? All right. So that was meant to be funny in a way. But what it also is meant to be an example is that sometimes fiction becomes part of what we believe to be true, you know, fantasy, fiction, things that we're now seeing as our brain is growing in these wrong directions based upon erroneous information. We may be seeing options to what's going on in our life, whether that's job options, relationship options, health options, where we live options. We see these things, and if we focus on them so much, we may then see how they compare and contrast to what we're doing right now, and we may then not be satisfied with what we're doing right now. The more we hear about home, work, life balance, the more we may see how out of balance our home, work, life is, and therefore we may get our burnout accelerated by this new knowledge. How does a relationship spillover work into this? That burnout can drain emotional availability. So a relationship spillover could be either way. A relationship issue could spill over into a work problem, or work problems could make us more tense, more aggravated at home, where it can feed into a relationship. And this is going on more and more so. And maybe we just hear about it more and more so because people are posting their private individual life stories on the internet and just trying to get content, and now we hear about it more and we see it more and it's more often. Is it really more often, or is it just easier to hear stories about? And finally, one partner says, you don't care anymore, and the other says, I have nothing left. So burnout can become a relationship, you know, that what's going on at work has just hit them so hard that they just have nothing left at work or at home. And so when their partner says, you don't care anymore, the other person's like, you know what, I have so much going on, I have nothing left. I have nothing left here, nothing left at work. So this is a real issue. It's a real issue around the world. World Health Organization brings it up. Finally, let's talk about segment six. Segment six is narcissism and social media psychology. Everybody becomes a psychologist on social media. They want to label people as misrepresenting the truth. There's disinformation. Somebody's a narcissist. Somebody's a psychopath. And what's, I think, interesting about this is that in reality, when you look at people diagnosed as narcissist, there's a study says that it's something like 6.2% have lifetime narcissistic personality disorder, 6.2%, which means that some point in their lifetime have been diagnosed. It doesn't mean they're currently, quote, narcissistic. Narcissistic has become a term that has been tossed around because somebody doesn't like the behavior of someone else. Oh, they forgot my birthday. Oh, they're a narcissist. Oh, they didn't ask me how I did when I went to the doctor. They're a narcissist. And we throw that term around rather than say to them, hey, I was upset that you forgot my birthday, and you know, most likely they're going to say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I forgot your birthday, why don't we go out and grab lunch together? That labeling somebody narcissist immediately is something that has been happening more often. I've seen so many people, oh, they're a narcissist, my ex was a narcissist, my present is a narcissist, the next person I'm going to be in a relationship is a narcissist, everyone's a narcissist. Well, in a sense, social media makes us narcissists. We try to present ourselves in the best way possible, ignoring how others feel about us, because we need to get likes, we need people to see our content, whatever the case may be. Social media promotes narcissistic behavior. And because of that, people see it, they see it more often, and now they just start labeling everybody that they dislike or have a problem with a narcissist when they see any symptom of narcissistic behavior. Whereas in a real diagnosis, there has to be persuasive long-term patterns of narcissism, not just with you, it's with everyone they deal with. If it's just with you, maybe they just don't like you. Maybe you are misreading things. Maybe there's something else going on that is not what is actually causing this behavior. Let's try that again. Maybe there's something going on with your relationship with this person and your ability. For instance, I remember somebody years ago, they used to say, hey, their ex-husband was a narcissist and this was their behavior. And they listed their behavior, and I'm going, you know what, that sounds pretty much like that person's behavior. Later on, I saw the person that told me this acting in many of the same ways. And I'm going, is this narcissistic behavior, like there's just little pieces of it? Or do people notice the behaviors others have that are very similar to their own? And then they are quick to label them. Again, social media has us doing things which we care about ourselves and how we're perceived, and social media pushes really for us acting in ways that make us look like we love ourselves. You know, we love ourselves, we don't care about anyone else, and this is, you know, these are our photos, this is how great we are, and it pushes that behavior. And then everyone sees that and they see how great somebody else looks on the internet and they get upset. They get depressed, they get anxious. We talked about this, that those who spend more time on social media have higher probabilities of being anxious, depressed, and sad. And this is prevalent in today's society. Finally, with narcissistic behavior, call out the behavior. Don't label the person. So this goes back to when you manage somebody at work. You don't say somebody, they're unreliable. You say, hey, I asked you to come in on this day because we were doing this job at work. You agreed, and then you did not show up. I need you here when you say you are going to be here. You call out the behavior. When you call out the behavior, it surely shows the person that you're actually paying attention to what's going on. Whereas if you just say, you're unreliable, what is that? It's a label. Call out the behavior, the narcissistic person. Hey, you forgot my birthday, you know, and it's really important to me. You forgot our anniversary, but when I forgot your birthday, you got all upset at me. Call out the behavior, deal with the behavior. This all trickles back to, we started this off with AI therapy, is that when we want to withdraw and not connect with people and not call out the behavior, but we'd rather talk to an AI bot about what the problem is with what's going on with our friends, rather than deal with our friends, deal with our relations, deal with our partners, deal with our family directly, we lose that relationship. So again, call out the behavior. Don't worship the label. Finally, we are evolutionary brains stuck in this artificial environment. So we are evolutionary brains in evolved bodies, and then we're in this, you know, the last 20-year artificial environment of the internet, of stuff like this, where I'm talking into a computer and creating a show. We do these things, and naturally, these things aren't natural. And when they're not natural, we're trying to figure out our ways to navigate. And as we figure out our ways to navigate, we're going to make wrong turns. turns. We need to know how to readjust, how to use our brain's neuroplasticity to change the direction we're going, to help us change and improve ourselves in order for us to connect and relate with others who are important in our lives. I want to appreciate and thank you for listening to today's rant and take on the psychology issues of 2026. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate. We will see you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.